It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. Carrie will be back tomorrow. This election season, Wisconsin Public Radio is meeting people where they are in their communities to talk about issues that matter most to them. As part of our weekly conversation about Beyond the Ballot project, we're going to take a look at the role of money in politics this morning. Do you feel like your elected officials reflect you and the community you live in? Why or why not? What are your biggest concerns when it comes to the role of money in politics? Or do you think that worries about campaign finance are overblown? Well, whatever your views, give us a call and let us know all about them. 800-642-1234 is the number to call, 800-642-1234. You can also email us, ideas@wpr.org is the address, or you can tweet us, @WPRMornings. I'm joined this morning by Bridget Bowden, our special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio. She's project manager of Beyond the Ballot. Welcome back, Bridget.
Thank you so much for having me again.
And Ellie Powell is the Booth Fowler Associate Professor of Political Science at the UW-Madison. She's also the author of the book, Where Money Matters in Congress, which examines the influence of money on the internal politics of Congress and the biases it has for the policymaking process. Thank you for joining us, Ellie.
Thanks for having me.
Bridget, we'll start with you. Today we're exploring the role of money in politics, and this is something we've heard about from Wisconsinites who have participated in Beyond the Ballot. Refresh us on the goals of this project.
Right. So Beyond the Ballot is a project that WPR is taking on this year, where we are actually going to be interviewing 500 people across the state leading up to this fall's elections. So we're going out to events, and we're seeking out people that would like to talk to us, and we're asking everybody the same set of questions and using their answers to inform what we cover this election season.
So, Bridget, the responses involving the role of campaign finance primarily stemmed from the question, do you feel like your elected officials reflect you and the community you live in? It's one of six questions we're asking Wisconsinites as we head toward the midterm elections. So how were these questions developed?
So this is actually question number three, the question you just read. And we developed the six questions as a news team. So we all sat down and we kind of brainstormed if we could ask 500 people anything, what would we ask them? And we came up with a list, a very long list of questions. And then slowly we pared it down to just these six questions. And we really think that they do a good job at letting people interpret them in the way that they want to. So we want to know what's most important to people, and that's different for all different people. So we really like this question.
Well, let's turn to the issue at hand, money in politics. Tell us about a one person we talked to in Wisconsin, Mark Castle.
So, yeah, Mark is a farm policy analyst, and he lives in Lafarge, Wisconsin.
Well, the single most important issue to me in this election, and really every election for at least the last decade, is money in politics. And we don't hear enough leadership out of the candidates in terms of reining in Citizens United and other ways that have transferred power within our electoral system from individual voters to corporations. There's always been money in politics, but it's money on steroids now. And it really dilutes the power of the electorate. And so who are these folks listening to? If they're not rich when they enter office, they're usually rich by the time they leave. So are they of the people? Are they one of us?
So, Ellie, let's bring you into the discussion. What do we know generally about how voters feel about money in politics? Is it a top issue for most people like it is for Mark?
Well, a lot of voters say that they're concerned about the issues of money and politics. They're concerned about corruption. They're concerned about sort of biases in the system. The challenge is they don't often say that that's their most important issue when they go to vote. And so we have this little bit of tension where voters care about it, you know, passionately, just as we've heard. But at the same time, they haven't been able to successfully convince politicians that it's their primary issue, such that the politicians should move legislation that might make it harder for them to get themselves reelected.
We're talking about money and politics this hour as we move through another program based on our Wisconsin Public Radio initiative, Beyond the Ballot. Wondering what you think about money and politics. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our discussion. Well, Ellie Powell, what are the main ways that money influences politics?
Well, it influences politics in a number of ways. It influences how members get elected, of course. Members have to spend a tremendous portion of their time actually raising money. And this is something that's changed dramatically over the last several decades. You know, congressional candidates, candidates for other offices have to raise so much money that they have to spend a large amount of their time, sometimes 2, 3, 4, 6 hours a day, making phone calls to raise money, showing up to fundraisers to raise money. And this sort of shifts the amount of time they could spend legislating or spend meeting constituents. And instead, they're having to spend that time with voters and not actually working on the concerns that voters have.
Okay, well, I want to go back to something that you said just a moment ago about how, okay, people think this is an important issue, but they don't seem to be able to convince their elected representatives to make some changes. But how is it even possible to make changes given some of the decisions that have been handed down by courts, the Supreme Court of the United States, primarily about money is speech and corporations are people and have free speech rights and can spend as much money as they like, pretty much. How do we create laws that might actually have some effect on the money in politics problem?
This is the other big challenge that essentially we've seen a number of Supreme Court rulings. Citizens United is the one that gets the most attention, although it's not necessarily the most influential. There have been a number of recent rulings, but rulings going back to the 1970s that have held, as you say, that money is speech, and sort of more recent rulings sort of talking about freedom of association. And those rulings have struck down the few limits that Congress and other organizations have managed to impose. And so you have this real tension in terms of what potential challenges could be made to the changes could be made to the system to limit the influence of money, and what the Supreme Court, at least under the current composition of the Supreme Court, might actually uphold. So there have been some programs that people have talked about, some sort of limited public financing options. They would, of course, not be compulsory. They'd have to be voluntary. And so the challenge is they need to be funded sufficiently that candidates would actually be willing to forsake the greater amount of money that they could typically raise in the sort of private fundraising model.
And of course, campaign finance reform isn't a new idea. It's been a part of our country's history, I mean, going back into the 19th century. So this concern over money in politics isn't anything new, is it?
No, it's not. And there's been this constant push and pull that, you know, every couple of decades, Congress does actually get its act together and might pass a sort of more restrictive campaign finance system. And then the Supreme Court typically knocks down at least some component of it. And then we sort of get this much looser system. And then voters get concerned again. You might get another more restrictive system passed that would hold for a few years until either the court knocks it down or creative campaign finance lawyers and candidates find ways around the rules that are in place.
Bridget, I want to go back to we heard the audio from Mark Castle. Was he fairly typical of the people you talked to about this question?
So if you'll remember, the question is, do you feel like your elected officials represent you and your community? So I would say that for the most part, most people answer this question with a kinda, you know, I feel kinda represented. In some cases, that means I feel represented by my local officials, but not by state and national officials. In other cases, that can mean, you know, I like one of my senators, but not the other one. And then there are some people who have a very specific issue, like Mark, who does care deeply about campaign finance. And so there are quite a few people that we've talked to that have a similar answer to this question and do feel like they're not represented because of the money that is in politics. But it's not everyone, but it is certainly a lot of people.
All right. Let's do this very quickly. Gary, let's take a call before we go to our news break, and then we'll have our guests respond afterwards. Gary, you'll have to be quick. We've got about 40 seconds.
Okay. When the Supreme Court decided in favor of the Citizens United, to me that was like a punch in the stomach. It was like the injection of a deadly virus in the blood system of democracy. And I've lost my faith and trust in the Supreme Court, ever since that decision. So, and I don't know why those corporations can get the freedom of speech through that process, but they never face the consequences of their corruption like an individual does.
Okay. Gary, thanks for the call, and we'll have our guests comment on that after we take our break for the news. Bridget Bowden is a special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio and project manager of Beyond the Ballot. Ellie Powell is an associate professor of political science at UW-Madison. We'll continue our discussion of money in politics after the news. I'm John Munson in for Kerry Kaufman. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kerry Kaufman. We're talking about political campaigns and campaign financing this morning with Bridget Bowden, project manager of Beyond the Ballot, WPR's Election Year Project, and Ellie Powell, the author of the book Where Money Matters in Congress and an associate professor of political science at UW-Madison. Do you feel like your elected officials reflect you and the community you live in? Why or why not? What are your biggest concerns when it comes to the role of money in politics? Or perhaps you think worries about campaign finance are overblown. What kind of reform efforts do you think are needed to solve this problem, if you think it's a problem? And what's at risk if we don't reform campaign finance laws? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Well, just before the break, we heard from a caller who seemed very frustrated, and that was, I think, the main message. Very frustrated with the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court. Said basically he'd lost faith in the system. First of all, Bridget, how frequently did you hear that sentiment as people from Wisconsin shared their stories with you? And then Ellie, I'd like you to weigh in on this as well.
So we hear a lot of frustration with the electoral system. Some of it is related to money. Some of it is related to other things. But there is certainly a lot of frustration out there. Specifically, people frustrated about Citizens United. I've heard that a few times, a handful of times. But I should mention that this project is, you know, it's not a scientific poll. It's not a study. I'm not a political scientist. But it is a way that we can kind of get a feel for what is important to the people of Wisconsin and what they care about. And this is certainly something that people care about.
So, Ellie, how concerned are you when people say things like our caller did before the news about that, you know, they've lost faith in our political institutions and in the court system itself? How concerned are you when you hear that?
It's really concerning. I mean, trust in government, trust in the electoral process, trust in that elected representatives are sort of acting on the will of the people is incredibly important for how our government works and sort of how people feel about the government. And so one of the reasons these campaign finance rules exist is not only to reduce the possibility of actual corruption, of actually legislators changing how they behave, but it's also so that voters feel that their representatives are acting in their interest, to reduce the sort of appearance of corruption by reducing any sort of concerns that there are conflicts of interest there. And so by removing some of these campaign finance restrictions, we're creating the situation for voters to be reasonably suspicious that politicians are taking into account money and not their voters, the people who elected them.
So there's probably a popular assumption that with Citizens United and other decisions that we've basically thrown away the rule book, that there really aren't any campaign finance laws left. And is that true? Is anything left? What are still some of the rules that people running for office have to follow?
There are still rules on the books. people running for office still have to, you know, when they collect money, there are limits on how much an individual can give directly to a candidate. They have to report those contributions to the Federal Election Commission. So there are sort of rules on the books, and there are some ways that voters can find out who's spending and who's spending what money, where that money is going. The challenge is there are increasingly so many workarounds, various forms of so-called dark money, where essentially different types of contributors can manipulate the system to sort of work in the gray area of the rules to give much larger amounts of money, and to give that money in ways where disclosure isn't possible, where essentially they can give the money and pretty much find ways to hide their identity. So voters can't find out as much who's funding the campaigns, where that money is going. And so the rules are sort of still technically on the books, but there are so many workarounds that disclosure is really weakened under the current set of rules.
Let's take another call. We'll go to Joe next in Waukesha. Joe, thank you for joining us on the morning show today.
Hi. I'm afraid I agree with the first caller. I really see the system as so corrupt with money, but also the way the Supreme Court has judged, for example, that corporations are persons, and therefore this connects with the issue of money as well, so that it's really impossible to, as your expert mentioned as well, it's almost impossible to even follow the money oftentimes. The other issue, though, is, and this is equally insane, I think, in this whole electoral system that we have, and that is the length of time that these electoral processes go on. It seems as though we are in a constant electoral cycle. In other words, we're already talking about the 2020 election for president, and that's a major, major one. But then, as well as the federal elections, but also not less important or less lengthy, are state elections. And the media itself is making, because there's so much money sloshing around in the system, the media makes a fortune on obviously, you know, promoting these interminable elections. And one of the things I think was extraordinary, the person who asked, I mean, when I was speaking to the person on the phone, they said, well, are other countries like this? And I said, you know, we are unique in the Western world with these interminable elections. Canada and Europe, in other words, developed countries, the elections last literally a few weeks. We saw that just recently with May's, she's called an election. It was a few weeks. It was there. It was gone. In other words, when you have elections that go on forever, not only are you making fortunes for the media, but you're also turning people off. They're just so tired of hearing about it, they don't even bother voting. And I think that's one of the, you know, our democracy is in serious, serious danger of turning into some sort of, you know, I don't know, a banana republic or even a fascist system. It's quite frightening.
Joe, thanks for your call. Ella, you want to respond to him first, please?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I would certainly agree that the length of campaigns in American politics is much longer than what we see in other countries. You know, countries where there are sort of snap elections, where we don't have sort of fixed election cycles, where elections get called, you know, might have, you know, a 6-week election, right? That sort of compresses the campaign calendar. It compresses, you know, the number of weeks time you can be saturated with the airwaves in terms of being inundated with ads and commercials. So the length of campaigns is different here. And the scope and scale of campaign funding is wildly different here than what we see in other countries. Other countries are sort of slowly starting to pick up and sort of slowly starting to model themselves on the American system, and more money is being spent in their campaigns. But they typically have just a completely different scale of spending and typically have more restrictive campaign finance rules, at least in terms of most sort of more democratic systems. And so there are differences here, and, you know, with the result of that is long campaigns and big costs.
And one of the things that that seems to have shifted over time, and you can tell me whether this is an accurate perception or not, Ellie Powell, is that we've seen a tremendous growth in spending by groups that have really no connection directly, or at least they're not supposed to, with candidates running for office. So candidate A is running and group B decides they like candidate A, and so they start running a whole lot of negative advertising about candidate C, who's running against candidate A, and candidate A has no control over the message. Or the amount of money spent. At least that's the way it appears. And that seems to be something a little bit different than that's sort of grown up over, say, the last 25 years or so. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, exactly. That's how people are skirting these campaign contribution limits. If you give the money directly to a candidate, there are still limits on how much money you can give. And, you know, if you're talking about for a federal election, you're talking about in the scale of, you know, roughly $5,000. But you can give basically unlimited amounts of money to these outside groups, to these sort of nonprofits, to these super PACs, who can then spend unlimited amounts in what are called independent expenditures. So they can spend money sort of on the campaign advocating for candidates or causes, but they're not legally allowed to coordinate with that candidate. And so this is why the candidates actually have perfect plausible deniability. They're legally not allowed to control the message, but it means that, you know, lots of things can be said that they have no control over. It's all by these sort of outside group spending.
Joe, thanks so much for your call. Let's go next to Jerry in Green Bay. Jerry, welcome to the morning show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much. And just to jump onto your point there, when it comes to kind of what I would like to see for money in politics, is the system is rigged against us, of course. And everybody knows that. There's this illusion that things are all well and good, but really it's just legal bribery. I'd like to see two laws in place. One, if you can't vote for the candidate, you can't give or support the candidate in any way. Only the voters can actually elect the candidate, so only the money raised should actually come from the district that people are running to represent. And secondly, we need to amend the state's ethics law and conflict of interest law, basically saying that no judge or lawmaker can take action that would benefit their donors. Once we start focusing on that, we can actually start focusing on issues and actually addressing people's concerns in the state.
Jerry, thanks for your call. Ellie Powell?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a number of issues at play here. I certainly think the challenge, I think, would be that, you know, it's difficult to write the laws that would pass Supreme Court scrutiny in the way that you're suggesting. The Supreme Court has had, you know, pretty tough standards in terms of laws that would pass sort of First Amendment concerns. And so I think the system that you're suggesting probably wouldn't pass muster, at least under the current composition of the Supreme Court. Now, obviously, if the composition of the Supreme Court were to change in sort of ways that would be more favorable to campaign finance reform, those possibilities would open up. But it's sort of tough to imagine sort of campaign finance reform changes that the Supreme Court, current Supreme Court, would uphold that would solve those problems directly.
The funny thing is, and way, way, way back a long time ago when I still had hair, I used to do a little work in political campaigning. And I remember that it used to be for, say, state assembly, for example. It used to be that if you were getting money from outside your district, that became a campaign issue. And, you know, the idea was, well, you know, so-and-so is getting all his or her money from somebody in Cleveland. And, you know, that means they're beholden to them, not us. That used to actually be a campaign issue. Now it's just kind of accepted as, you know, par for the course.
And it still is a campaign issue occasionally. I would say that, you know, opponents will still try to use that against candidates. They'll still run ads touting that, especially if there are unusually large amounts of outside money. The issue is candidates are still usually willing, they'd rather have the money and take the sort of electoral hit for being sort of outside the district. And so there's a little bit of tension here. It's not that there are no penalties for that sort of outside money, you know, perceptions of being sort of not, you know, authentically from Wisconsin or being funded by these outside groups. It's just the money's worth enough that they're willing to take the sort of electoral penalty that might come with it.
And Ellie, I'm curious. We've talked to a little more than 300 people at this point, and I have yet to hear anyone say either I'm totally fine with the amount of money in politics or I'd like there to be more in politics. And so I'm wondering if that is a perspective that you have ever heard, or if everyone you've ever talked to is kind of this mind of something needs to change.
I would say most people I talk to are concerned about the system, and they're concerned about the sort of scope and scale of money in politics and the changes over the last few years. There are people who think, you know, money is speech, who sort of agree with the view of the Supreme Court. And so this is not a universal view. And I would say also money doesn't mean everything in terms of electoral politics. It's not that the candidate with the most money always wins the election. That's certainly not the case. It helps. It helps in a bunch of different ways. It makes your campaign easier. There are sort of all sorts of ways in which it can be useful and influence the electoral process. But it's not everything. And voters don't all agree that it's a concern or a problem in the system.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, Ellie, because if you look at the most recent presidential election, toward the beginning of the cycle, Jeb Bush had the most money of anybody, and certainly far more money than Donald Trump. And yet Donald Trump beat him and rather handily. So it's not always the most important factor, but it certainly certainly is a huge presence in elections.
No, exactly. You have to spend the money well and wisely. It's not that any amount of money will sort of help your campaign. It has to be deployed strategically and wisely. You know, in hindsight, people, you know, don't necessarily think the Bush campaign was as strategic as they could be about how they spent that money. Maybe there were other tactics. But also, you know, one of the things that was unusual about the Republican primaries in 2016 is there were so many candidates. It was such a wide open field because there were so many candidates. And one of the candidates, now President Trump, received so much free media that if you were to sort of take that amount of free media that he received and you were to actually cost that out in terms of, you know, paid advertising, it would be, you know, tremendously outspending Bush and all of the other candidates. And so it's one of those things where there are certainly ways where other outside candidates can make up for the sort of lack of sort of direct campaign spending.
Bridget, let's hear from another Wisconsinite. Tell us about Kirk Stone's take.
So Kirk Stone is from Madison, and he also says that transparency is really important to him.
I would like to have them take a look and really talk about their funding. So where are they getting their money from? What interests are they beholden to? Are they going to then be beholden to them following if they get elected? What favors do they have to return? And I would like them to be more clear about where their funding comes from and who are they going to be responsible to. Will it be me or will it be some special group?
So, Ellie, what's the role of transparency here, you think?
Transparency is incredibly important for faith and for understanding and sort of, again, reducing the potential of corruption in the sort of political process in these campaigns. And one of the frustrating parts of the current campaign finance system is it's sort of transparent theoretically on paper, but in practice with all these workarounds, it's incredibly difficult for voters to actually find out who's spending the large amounts of money and to find out those numbers in a timely process. So the system is in some ways deliberately designed to obfuscate and to slow down voters' ability to find these things out. One of the craziest parts of the campaign finance system is actually the way the U.S. Senate works. The U.S. Senate actually insists on paper campaign finance filings. So instead of filing their campaign finance reports electronically, the way the House does, the way anyone would do in 2018, they actually, of course, the campaigns keep digital records on computers themselves, but they then print off those records. They print those records, and then they have to be manually entered. So it wastes a tremendous amount of time and money, but it also means that voters actually can't find out how much money is being spent until long after the election.
We're talking about campaign financing and money in politics with Bridget Bowden, special project reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio and project manager for the Beyond the Ballot initiative. Ellie Powell is an associate professor of political science at UW-Madison. We'll continue the discussion after the news. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Carrie Kaufman. Carrie's back tomorrow. We're talking about the role of money in campaigns. It's part of the Beyond the Ballot project. Bridget Bowden is project manager for that project, WPR's election year project, and Ellie Powell is the author of the book Where Money Matters in Congress and an associate professor of political science at UW-Madison. Let's go back to the phones here as we continue our discussion about money and politics and hear from Glenn, who calls us from Minocqua. Glenn, good morning. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Yes, thanks for having me. I heard one of the speakers say that they hadn't heard from anybody who thought there wasn't too much money in politics or would like to see more, and I just thought I would chime in and let her know there are some of us out here. I don't have any problem at all with the money in politics. I think Citizens United was the First Amendment rights, and I am very irritated when I can't give more money individually to the politicians that I would like to support. One of the persons earlier said something about politicians shouldn't be able to do anything that benefits donors. That's impossible to enforce. Are they now supposed to do the opposite of what the donors do for them? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I don't have a problem at all with the amount of money in politics, and I would like to be able to give more.
Thanks, Glenn, for sharing your perspective. Ellie Powell, would you like to respond to that? And then I'd like to hear from you too, Bridget.
Sure. Yeah, the caller makes a great point, and he's certainly not alone. There are a number of other voters and people out there who think that, you know, there shouldn't be campaign finance limits. And, you know, he essentially agrees with the majority of the Supreme Court, who have held that, you know, money is speech, and in the American system, we shouldn't limit speech. Speech is a constitutional right, and he should be able to sort of advocate and support for the political issues and candidates that he supports. And so this is a sort of constitutionally complicated issue where on the one hand people are concerned about, you know, potential corruption or the concerns about, you know, appearances of corruption, but, you know, the counter pressure is, you know, the ability to advocate for causes that you believe in, which is a sort of fundamental American right. So there's an inherent tension here, and campaign finance laws sort of walk the border between the two of them. And, you know, the caller, you know, makes a good point advocating for the side we haven't heard as much from this morning.
Yes, Glenn, thank you so much for calling. I should say that as we go out and ask these questions, it's up to people to tell us what's most important to them. So although nobody has said that money in politics is not a big issue for them, that certainly doesn't mean that it isn't. So thank you so much for calling and sharing that perspective. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Bridget, let's turn to another Wisconsinite. What does Cedric Ellis have to say on this?
So Cedric is also from Madison, and he says that it's hard to believe that elected officials could truly represent their community when only rich people get elected. So here's Cedric.
What's happened is only the wealthy get elected. So we're not really being fairly represented in Pickett, Congress, the Senate. You know, even the presidency, if you think a little bit about who gets to run, if you don't have the money, if you don't come from wealth, if you haven't built wealth, you're not going to make it. So how can you fairly represent people who struggle and people who live paycheck to paycheck? Because you can't necessarily relate. I'm not saying that they can't connect with their constituency, but if you haven't lived it, it's hard to reflect it and represent it in laws that you're passing.
So let's get a reaction from our guests on what we just heard there.
Yeah, so I think the caller makes a good point. One of the things that we see in sort of political science research is, you know, candidates, you know, politicians tend to sort of represent, you know, their own background, their own personal experiences the best. And so it can sometimes be a concern for voters that if candidates don't share their background, they won't be able to sort of adequately represent the views of their constituents. And it is more challenging for candidates who don't come from wealth or at least aren't good fundraisers to get elected. It's not that it doesn't happen. We do have candidates get elected who aren't independently wealthy. But if you look at the U.S. Senate, if you look at the U.S. House, they're vastly more wealthy than the American people writ large. And so it's really challenging if you don't come from wealth to get elected under the current system. And both parties look for candidates who can self-finance, who can raise, you know, spend their own personal money, because it'll be so much easier on the party. The party won't have to help them raise this money, and they can, you know, spend their fundraising efforts in support of electing other candidates.
We had a call from John in Milwaukee who says advertising should be free for all the candidates, and they should be given equal time so that no one has an advantage. Let's talk about the first part of that first. Advertising should be free for all candidates. That's actually been proposed, I think, in the past. How would we actually create a system where we did something like that, Ellie?
Well, there certainly could be ways to do sort of various public financing efforts. I mean, what the caller is suggesting of sort of giving all the candidates some airtime certainly would be allowed. You know, you'd have to find a way to compensate the radio stations and TV stations and all the sort of mediums to do it. But if the government wanted to do this, they could certainly do that. The challenge would be the flip side, the second part of the call, of not limiting. So the amount of time is even, right? The problem is what you can't do is you can't ban people from buying extra time. So you could give everyone some amount of time, but people could then spend money and then buy extra time. So it wouldn't be quite a level playing field.
Well, and then that wouldn't do anything about outside spending that has nothing to do with the candidate directly, at least as far as the law is concerned. Before we completely run out of time here, which is rapidly going to become an issue. We have one more Wisconsinite we should hear from this hour. Bridget, who do we have for us?
So this is my last clip, and it's Tyler Buss from Green Bay, and he has a request for people running for office.
Showing the donor list. That just shows where you're... If you're getting donations from someone that's not... on the level, it kind of shows what kind of person you are, where you're willing to take your money from.
And this goes back to something, Ellie, you were talking about earlier and a previous caller was talking about, which is transparency. And maybe people wouldn't worry so much about the amount of money in politics if they were certain that they knew where it was coming from. How would we ensure that?
Well, this is something that certainly could be changed in the system that I think would be permissible under the laws. This would be to sort of make more rapid and transparent disclosure. Maybe you'd even remove some of the campaign finance limits in exchange for essentially having clear and immediate transparency, which under the digital world would certainly be sort of technologically possible in ways that it didn't used to be. Justice Brandeis used to say, like, sunshine is the best disinfectant, to sort of let people know, let journalists talk about it, sort of let all these things out in the open so that voters can make their own decisions about whether it's a conflict or a concern of theirs.
So what can people do on the ground? I mean, at the granular level, the local level, what can individual people do to mitigate the effects of big money in politics, the kinds of concerns that most of our callers and the people that were talking to the Beyond the Ballot Project had today? What can people do about that?
Well, at the end of the day, the most important thing is to actually vote for their concerns, to sort of raise the issues to their politicians, to their elected officials, make their views on campaign finance known, but also just to go out and vote for the candidates that they support and they believe in, to sort of volunteer for those campaigns, to contribute to those campaigns, all those sort of little steps. At the end of the day, the campaign spending is intended to sort of influence elections. And so at the end of the day, that's really about voters and efforts and that sort of is one strategy they can pursue.
Let's take one more caller here. We'll go to Nate in Milwaukee. Nate, hello. Welcome to the morning show.
Hi. Thank you. And I wholeheartedly endorse the idea, by the way, of going to the politicians and trying to prod them to talk about campaign finance reform, because some of them don't want to do it. Partly in response to a prior caller, I'm thinking if somebody is upset about the limit on the amount of money they can donate to a candidate already, I suspect that they are donating what a typical person would see as eye-popping amounts to politicians already. And it was ironic to me that that was joined alongside with almost a defense of legalized bribery with politicians voting on things that donors want. And, if you're talking about a state legislature, they could abstain from voting on such a bill.
All right, Nate, thanks a lot for your comments. Any response to that? Ellie, Bridget?
Yeah, one of the challenges is always sort of dealing with conflict of interest concerns, both in terms of donors and what donors have contributed and how those conflict of interest rules work, but also all candidates, all elected officials have their own sort of private concerns, whether it's personal real estate or stock holdings and what the like. And so trying to sort of navigate those rules where you know, constituents aren't disadvantaged if their representative happens to share some of the views and interests that they have, but to make sure that people aren't being unfairly advantaged and that the system, again, doesn't appear unfair to its voters.
Bridget, if people want to get involved with Beyond the Ballot to talk about their thoughts about money and politics or other issues, what's the best way for them to do that?
So, yeah, we would love for people to reach out to us and share their thoughts, tell us what's important to them. So we have a hotline, which is 877-782-8942. They can call us there, or you can send us an email at beyondtheballot@wpr.org.
And Bridget, one more question for you. What's been the biggest, I don't want to say surprise, but I guess that's the only word I can think of right now since you started working on this project?
I think the biggest surprise for me as a reporter is just how many different things people care deeply about. You know, we expected people to talk about healthcare and immigration and, you know, all of the hot button issues. But as we go out and ask people what they care about, we hear about a very wide range of issues, everything from those hot button issues to things like backyard chickens. So that, you know, different people across the state have very different issues that are deeply important to them. And that's been really fun to learn about.
Give us that hotline number again and the email address, please.
So the hotline is 877-782-8942, and the email address is beyondtheballot@wpr.org.
Bridget, Ellie, thank you so much for spending this hour with us. It was very informative.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bridget Bowden is a special projects reporter at Wisconsin Public Radio, project manager of Beyond the Ballot. And Eleanor Powell is the Booth Fowler Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Madison. She's also the author of the book, Where Money Matters in Congress, which examines the influence of money on the internal politics of Congress and the biases it builds in for the policymaking process. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.